Whoa, pause the music here just for a second. I gotta jump in and say, I apologize. When I was listening to this episode after we recorded it, I realized, due to my new podcast setup that I'm not quite used to yet, there are a few times here and there, including the very beginning of the episode, where my voice kind of maybe goes in and out, kind of like this, a little bit in and out like this. And please bear with me. I know that can be a little bit annoying, but I'm trying to make some tweaks and get used to this new setup. So that being said, I'll stop talking. On with the show. Let's go. And we are finally back. It's been a while since we've recorded. This is episode 9, iOS Building Blocks. My name is Scott Smith. If you're a first-time listener, welcome. This is amazing. I love that you've tuned in. If you're a return customer, this is great too. I love you all. So thank you for tuning in. This is awesome. Again, I'm Scott Smith. You can find me on Twitter at ScottSmithDev. And what else should I say? Here we go. This episode is brought to you in part by Sleff, a brand for devs who type self. You can go to scottsmithdev.com/sleff or self for t-shirts and stickers. And somewhere along in this episode, maybe at the end, I'll share a promo code. You can get 25% off anything you buy there in the Sleff store. So that's cool. And all right, that's enough. On with the show. So if you are familiar with any of my other episodes, if you've listened, you might know that it really intrigues me when I see people in the community who aren't full-time iOS developers. And I don't usually know that right off the bat. So other episodes, you know, Dan O'Leary, he's a pilot, and sorry, I've said this before, other people are doing other things, but anyway, we found another one of these people, and I think it's incredible. I love it. So I was on Twitter one day, and I saw this person, who's our guest today, tweeted something, and that's when I found out, oh, wow, he's not a full-time iOS developer, but he's doing iOS development, and he's doing more than that. So anyway, we'll hear all about it today, because our guest is an exciting one. It is Cesar Palma, or we like to say it in America, Cesar Palma. Welcome to the show, Cesar. What's up?
Thank you for having me, Scott. Yeah, it's a pleasure, and I've been listening to your podcast since the beginning. And yeah, I'm an avid Pascal listener, and I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you. I love this. This is really great. So today is just a spotlight on you. We are just talking about you, all about you. And like I said, you tweeted recently about something, but you can really talk about whatever you want. But what was it you tweeted about?
Yeah. So it's been a year since I decided to create an app for myself, for the work that I do, and for my colleagues. So the day that I released the app, I decided to make an homage to all those developers that helped me in my journey, right? And to share my experience with other people that could have my same experience. Because I'm, as you mentioned, I'm not a full-time iOS developer. So when I tweet that, it was like just to show other people that you can do something if you have the willing to do it. And that's what I did. I created a tweet, mentioned all the people that I was involved in my growth as a iOS developer, and it blew up.
That is awesome. So reveal the secret. What do you do full time?
So yeah, I'm a CRA. That's a clinical research associate. A clinical research associate work together with research sites that runs clinical trials for new or current drugs in order to assess their effectiveness, risk, and benefits. So a CRA generally work for the companies who produce or manufacture the medication or a medical device. So I am one of those guys doing this. I've been doing this for more than 10 years, and I've been doing this all over the continent. I started in Central America, then I moved to South America, and recently I moved to Canada. So I've been doing this for a long time in three languages. It's my passion. I really like it. It's been great, but also I have that. I really like to code. I really like to solve problems, to build things, and that's why I started with this project.
Cool, very cool. So I have a lot of questions. So first of all, how did you get into coding? Also, what is the project that you made? And like, what does it do for you and your workers? So start wherever you want, but yeah, I'm really curious about those two things.
So yeah, well, I'm old. I started very early to play with computers, and I remember I was with Linux at the beginning. I was a hard dive fan of Debian. And then Ubuntu. So I was that guy that I built my computer just to run a Linux distro. So I really enjoyed that since the beginning. Then I think maybe around 2004, I started to write about Linux. I had a blog. It's already dead, but I had a blog. And yeah, I was sharing my experience about old things Linux, and that's how I started. And then WordPress. I remember playing with WordPress, PHP, HTML, some of CSS. So yeah, that's how I started to play with computers, with code. But it was in 2014, when Apple released the Swift programming language, when all the things started for me in terms of iOS development. I already was a Apple user for a long time. And when Craig Federighi announced Swift, I said, wow, this looks very, very nice. I mean, the syntax was very good. And I said, well, probably this is something that I could learn. And I remember my wife in the background, right? She was like, you should do that. And I was, oh, yeah, I think I could do that. And I started immediately I remembered. I just downloaded Xcode and start to play with the thing. And since 2014, I've been playing with apps, making example apps, toy apps, you know, the kind of things. So that's why I started with all the thing. It was an easy start for me. I didn't feel intimidated by the language. So it was a good starting point. And then, as I mentioned, I've been playing with apps, doing a lot of toy apps, but I was trying to make something for myself, because probably you have heard the saying, like, there's an app for that.
Oh, yeah.
But there's no an app. Well, there was not an app for what I do. And I was like, wow, I mean, somebody needs to do this. And I said, yeah, I'm going to start with this thing. And I started to do something like very basic, like a scheduler, something like that, you know. And the thing is that I started to work on that, like putting the fonts that I like, the colors that I like, and then the behavior that I like. So I tailored this to my taste, to my needs. And I remember one time I showed the app to one of my colleagues, And he was, "What? Did you make this?" And I said, "Yeah, I did it." And so it's in the App Store. And I remember it was like a couple of guys, I mean, two or three of my colleagues that asked for that. It's in the App Store. Can I download the app now? And then it was like a fuel for me. That was validation for me. And then I started to take this seriously in terms of, okay, I'm gonna make a product, and I'm going to put it into the App Store, and that's what I did. The app name is Days on Site, and Days on Site, it's a common phrase that we use as a CRAs. It's like, hey, how many days on site do you need to reach this month? Yeah, I need to reach 8, 10 days on site. So the days on site itself, it's something that means a lot to us. So yeah, and I decided to make the app, and I did it.
And that's it. Wow. And so how many of you use it that you know of right now, as far as like you and your colleagues?
Well, it was launched on November 11th.
Okay.
So it has little bit more than a week, and it's been amazing. A lot of people have downloaded the app, but I think it's more important, at least to me, it's that I got a lot of emails asking for, you know what, I really like this, can we make this different in this way, or I noticed that you're taking this into account, Could you make this more open to freelancers, for example, you know? Or I have a lot of downloads in Brazil, so they ask for translation, localization to Portuguese. So I think at some point we are going to have a community of people using the app, and that's pretty cool. So yeah, it's been, in my book, it's been a massive success, because to be honest, this was made for me, and I really like that other people are liking the app, and yeah, it's been great.
That is really amazing. I just eat this stuff up. When somebody, I sound like a broken record, when somebody is not a full-time iOS developer, but they develop an app anyway, and you're just loving it, and it's helping other people. And that's actually one of the things I love the most, or that intrigues me a lot about making apps, is finding something that would really solve a good problem. Not necessarily finding the next huge app like Twitter, you know, but something, like finding a problem and just really solving it. And it's way easy. Like, you just knew of a problem that you had or something you needed at work, some kind of problem that you could solve easier with an app, and you did it. So I love that. So, man, maybe I didn't explain myself very well, but you found an issue and you solved it with an app, bottom line. So I think that's excellent. So good job. And did you write it in Swift UI? Did you write it in UIKit? Let's hear about that.
Yes. The first iteration of the app was written in UIKit and Swift. But when Apple announced Swift UI, I was like, okay, let's give it a try. And what I did, it was like, I just translated one of the views to Swift UI just to learn the framework, you know, like doing, I'm going to create this button and then the transition, and then I'm going to show this view. And that was the last time that I wrote any UIKit code. It's been Swift UI since then, and it's been a fun experiment at the beginning, but now I feel confident with my code, and I mean if I'm gonna write something, it's Swift UI and Swift. So yeah, it's 100% Swift UI.
I love hearing that. I'm the same way. Right when I started Swift UI, I never looked back. It was such a pleasure to use and just so fun. It was like, whoa, like they said, you can focus on just making your app because you don't have to worry about all this other stuff like in UIKit, you know? And of course, UIKit holds a special place in all of our hearts, right? It's where we started. But man, Swift UI, it's a beautiful thing.
I really love UIKit. And as you mentioned, I think there's a lot of nostalgia at this point.
Yep.
I mean, since the beginning with Swift UI, I remember it was like, let's say 4 or 5 a week dealing with my UIKit chip that I needed to change. The way that the approach, it's different, right? So once you get the hang of it, it's second nature and it's fun, it's easier, and it's just so fun to write Swift UI. I think the engineers at Apple that make that possible, kudos for them. It's a great job, and it's a lot of it's helping a lot of people, a lot of developers like myself, right? That we are new in the community and we have these tools for us to use like for free, and you can build your ideas. You can transform your ideas to something tangible that you can hold in your hands. It's just mind blowing.
Yep. You hit it right on the head for me. I love translating things from your head to something tangible. This is an app you're holding in your hand and more people can use it. Anybody can use it. Making something out of nothing, didn't even exist, came out of your head, done. It's just, that experience is just amazing.
You know what? Something that I could share with you is like, when I started with this thing, definitely it was for fun because it is fun for me to code. And I remember because of my job, I need to travel a lot. Well, I needed in the past, before the pandemic, I was traveling a lot within the country. And that means a lot of hotels, rooms, a lot of waiting for your next flight. And to be seated in an airplane for 2 to 4 hours, right? So at some point I was watching a lot of TV shows and movies, and I was like, probably I could do something else more useful and fun with my time.
Yeah.
And that's how I used my time. I was coding all the time. So again, I think when you have the tools and it's available to you for free, I mean, it's just amazing. It's been a great experience for me.
I love that story. I love that you put your time to good use and learned something new that wasn't even your profession. And then you built an app and you put it up onto the App Store. You actually published an app. So another question about that, your app being on the App Store, did you put any kind of revenue model or anything, or is it just a free app? You use this and you get it.
So the app is free to download with limited features or limited use.
Okay. Okay.
So you can create up to two research sites with full, with all the features that the app have. And you can create up to 5 visits. After that, you're going to hit the paywall. And it's a subscription model. I decided to go for monthly and annual subscription. And yeah, I mean, so far it's been also good because I think when you value what you're doing, you should put a price to that. And I think my colleagues know that they're familiar with that. When you have a tool that helps you to improve your metrics, to to be on top of your deliverables. And it's a tool, again, it's a tool that you use to improve yourself. And you're going to be better at your job. We decided to put a price.
I think that's smart. Yeah. That's smart. And honestly, I don't think people should feel bad about that. I mean, sometimes it can be kind of an internal struggle for a developer, maybe thinking, oh, maybe I should just have this be free, but maybe they feel bad like putting a price on it. But honestly, you put your work into it. It was your time. And I think people value that. People who really need your app will value that. They'll think, okay, this is worth it. I'm going to pay it, no question, right? So I think it's a very good idea doing this subscription thing. And now that's even cooler with Apple's news of basically giving everybody a raise, right? So now they've cut their cut in half. So now you're going to make more. So that's fantastic.
It's a good time to be an iOS developer or jump into the boat.
It really is. I was thinking that same thing today. I was like, man, what a great time to be an iOS dev. This is a fun thing. So you said you can create up to 2 sites and then you can create up to 5 visits per site. Is that what you said before you hit the paywall?
Yeah.
And so one visit is a day on that site?
Could be a day. Could be because we have a different kind of visits. We have on-site visits, for example, that you need to go to the site and perform your visit for 1-2 days. But also we have remote visits that we can just have a chat with the coordinators on the research sites. There's site initiation visits, for example. It's the first visit on that site just to initiate the study. But also we have closeout visits. So we have a bunch of type of visits. All of them count as a visit.
That's cool. So what kind of things in your app does it track besides just saying, okay, yeah, I visited? Is it like the amount of time you were there? Types of things that you log? I'm curious.
So let me tell you more about that.
Yeah.
For example, when you as a CRA, you need first to confirm a visit. You need to confirm with the site that you're going to go there, for example. So the first thing and the first deliverable that you need to do is confirm the visit.
Okay.
Right? And then when you confirm the date, you should send a confirmation letter at least 5 days before the visit. So that's the second deliverable. You need something to track if you already sent that confirmation letter. After that, you perform the visit. After you perform the visit, you need to send a report to your manager to discuss the findings of the visit. Right? You receive some comments, but then you finalize the report and you have a metric for that. Some companies have like 10 days after the visit, you know? So you need to track that you are within the metrics. So that's another one. And after your report is finalized, you need to send a follow-up letter to your site, letting them know what are the findings, what was the important discussions that you had. So that's another deliverable. So you need to confirm the visit, send confirmation letters, finalize your report, send follow-up letters, all of them with timelines. So that's the first thing. The other thing is that you should perform visits periodically. So every 4, 6, 8 weeks, you need to perform a visit. So that's another one that you need another thing that you need to track. Besides that, you have to reach days on site. You need to reach 8, 10 days on site. That's other thing that the app tracks, how many days on sites you have. And that's amazing, at least for me, because I can see if the next month I'm overbooked or I need more days on site, so I need to find those. And I can also see if how is my my days on site in the future, like 6 months in advance. And I can see also all the history of my days on site. So it's an app specifically tailored for a CRA. So probably if you download the app, it's going to be...
I'll have no idea what I'm doing.
You're going to get it. But a CRA, it's like intuitive. Oh, so this is my sites. These are my visits, and I can see a tree of all my sponsors and my protocols. Definitely, it's hard to explain through a podcast,
right.
But it has all the things that you need to track and improve your metrics.
That's awesome. That sounds like a lot. I love that you said, like, if you are the person that needs this app and you find it and you download it, you just said it'll be intuitive. They'll just know, like, oh, so basically this is what they didn't know they needed. Or maybe they did know, and they're just like, I wish there was a thing like this. And they download it, and there it is. And they'll just know exactly what to do. That's awesome.
You know what? We all use different methods. I know a lot of colleagues they're using a spreadsheet to track all those things, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of filters and pivot tables. I know others that use a calendar, a paper with the dates, and now pen and paper, and to have this information, probably you need to open your computer, connect to the internet, connect the VPN, then enter to your company's private network and stuff, and then enter to your spreadsheet, and then filter to get information. Right. So days on site, it's right there. It's in your hand. And it's amazing because, I did this app for my needs. So one thing that I do is like, I'm going to this site. I barely know the area. But the app led me just tap on a button and open the maps and give me directions. And I can just go to the site. Also, another thing that it's important, at least it is for me, is that I can create new staff members.
That's cool.
I can create a contact, but that contact, it's in a separate group. It's not in all my contacts, you know. It's
right.
In a separate group. It's like the work contacts. And that's something that I needed to do. I want, and I did it. I just added to the app.
Man, you're on top of it. You've nailed it, I think. I mean, I love that you found this niche thing. You're like, I got this, and you added it all. You did it. And you said you got a lot of emails about things that you should add or maybe fix. What was the biggest thing that you thought, oh, of course I should do that, and you didn't maybe think of it originally?
Yeah, I think at the beginning, I started with a very close, it wasn't a beta testing, it was an alpha testing before the definitive design. I just showed the app to around 10 colleagues, and I put a test flight and just play with it, break it, and tell me what do you think and what do you improve in the app. And the responses were amazing. They were like very specific. You know what? So you have this time frame. but in some companies we have a different approach, and it's this and this and this. So they because I have the vision of my company, right? But there's a lot of other styles on the business. So okay, they gave me that point of view, and I added all those things to the app. So that's how it started. They were pointing some things to address, or a box, or this button doesn't do anything, right? So something like that.
Yeah.
So, but then when the app was released, you deal with a bunch of devices, with a bunch of edge cases, right? Yeah. So people, for example, that doesn't have an email on their phones, they don't have an iCloud account, or I mean, an iCloud attached to the mail app.
Uh-huh.
So the app allows you to send a bug report or contact me directly from the app. But what if you don't have configured that in your phone? So you need to think about all those things.
I'm one of those people. I just use the Gmail app. I don't have the mail app on my phone. So whenever I hit like button like that, it's like, do you want to restore the mail app? I'm like, nope. So
exactly. So yeah, a bunch of things are, for example, font sizes. So you need the thing in accessibility.
Oh yeah,
for your customers. Yep. So that was huge for me, so I discussed this with one of my friends who is an iOS developer as well, and he is invested in accessibility, and we discussed this about fonts, about what if the user is blind or something like that. So I've been trying to be more aware of these things. So my approach is the following. As soon as I get someone that needs something, I will work on that.
That's smart. That is smart. And that's very considerate too. I think that's a big part of being an iOS engineer, is being considerate, having the empathy, right? Like you said, once there's one person that says something, you know you need to fix it, because they're not the only person. That person is the one who spoke up about it, right? So, and there are billions of people in the world, and like, who knows how many people are going to eventually be using your app. You got to jump on it just like you're doing. I think that's really smart. Yeah, I love that you mentioned accessibility. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. I hear, you know, Paul Hudson tries to push that a lot. I think that's really smart, because you gotta feel for those people who have different abilities, or their vision's different than someone else. And yeah, you got to think about a lot of things. I think it's so cool that that's part of our job as an iOS developer, just thinking about all these different people, different needs, different wants, and you just make the magic happen.
Yeah, definitely.
So how about this? How are you marketing this? Because I love that you have this brand, and how are you marketing it? What's your idea?
Definitely, that's the worst part of the whole venture, the whole journey.
Yeah.
At least for me. I mean, coding and designing the app, it's been amazing, and it's something that I would do over and over again every day. But when it comes to marketing, it is hard. You know what? My wife, she's a marketing researcher specialist. I mean, she knows the whole thing. And we were discussing this, because when you have an app that is for a specific niche, for a specific customer, it's not going to be a 100,000 downloads. We are not expecting that. And also, probably it's not a good idea if you put that in, let's say, your local news, because in your community, you're going to have a handful of CRAs, you know? So it's hard to do the marketing for this kind of apps. So what I'm doing right now, it's I'm using my LinkedIn profile. In my LinkedIn profile, I have a bunch of former colleagues, right? And I'm just letting them know that I did something. And I'm not pushing this, but I know that someone is going to download the app and he or she is going to say, oh, did you know that there's an app for this?
Yep, there's an app for that.
And I'm, to be honest, I'm relying in the word of mouth on this. I try to reach some of the media outlets, but again, it's not a massive interest in this because it's very specific group of people that are going to use this. But yeah, it's been difficult, but I'm trying to do this the way that I know or that I can, using my own social media outlets.
Yeah, that's smart. I'll definitely push this out to my outlets as well, see where it can go. You know, you never know. It's got to hit that one person maybe, and then they'll tell a million people, you know, and a million people who need the app. That's all you need. You just need like $1 from a million people. You're like, oh, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. And to be honest, I know it sounds like cheesy, but I would like to people to enjoy this app. And I know it's going to help a lot of CRAs out there, because the whole point with the app is that you're more aware of the things that you need to do and when you need to do it. So that awareness makes you a better employee. That's the thing. And at the end of the day, we are helping to develop new drugs that's why I really, really like this job. We're pushing forward new therapies, you know, and, yeah, we are on the front line of developing new drugs. That's pretty cool to me. And I think we need the tools to do it more efficiently. And that's why I did it.
I love it. Yeah, I love how enthusiastic you are about your full-time job and enthusiastic about iOS development. So quick side question here. What was the education you got to be able to become what you are?
Yeah, I have a degree in chemistry and pharmacy. And I started as a medical liaison. It's something like you go and talk with doctors, with physicians about drugs, about therapies. And I started on that field. I've been in the pharmaceutical field for 15 years. And then we had this opportunity to develop a vaccine for dengue fever in Central America. So I jumped in into it, and it was a successful study. It was great. And I fell in love with the whole thing. Because it was like my career, but we need to use a lot of technology doing this. So it was like it was a good match for me. And yeah, after that, I was transferred to Brazil, and I lived there for a couple of years, more than a couple of years. And probably we don't have the time, but I live in the middle of the Amazon forest for a while, and then I moved to Sao Paulo, which is a 25 million people city. So it was it's been a long ride, but it's been a lot of fun on the way.
That is awesome. And speaking of Brazil, so for those of you listening, right before we were recording, we were talking about Caesar's name, and how are you saying they pronounced it in Brazil? Because Caesar, you're from Honduras, you mentioned to me. And so in Brazil, you said they pronounce it how?
Yeah. In Brazil, they pronounce like Zeza or Zeza. It depends on the region. Brazil, yeah. It's a massive country. It's 200 million people, right? So they have a lot of regions, and they have like this accent. Yeah. So it depends. But it's it's weird because my family, they pronounce it in Spanish,
right.
Cesar, with that, the rolling R.
The rolling R at the end.
And then a lot of my friends here in Canada are from Brazil. So we have that content. So I'm used to hear my name in the different accents and languages. So at this point, it's like, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Whatever you feel, comfortable doing it, saying it.
Yeah. I love languages. I could talk about that all day too. But, and I was just thinking, I didn't want to sound inconsiderate or ignorant in the beginning of the episode when I said, we've got our very own Cesar Palma, or as we say in America, I didn't mean to say America because I know we've got North America, Central America, South America. I meant to say, what's the right word? For those of us who don't speak Spanish or something like that, we would say Cesar Palma. I do speak Spanish, so I would say Cesar Palma. Anyway, so just to clear the air there, I didn't mean to be ignorant or inconsiderate in the beginning. But anyway, that's really cool. Languages, locations. I love cultures and things like that. That's really cool. You've been from the bottom of the hemisphere down there in Brazil. Now you're all the way up here into Canada. So I think that's really cool.
Definitely. Yeah, it's been a long journey for me in my career. Again, as I mentioned, I've been doing this all over the continent in three languages, meeting a lot of brilliant people on the way. That's been definitely the most fulfilling part of my job.
That is really cool. Really cool. Hey, you know what I want to talk to you about is,
tell me.
We're kind of switching gears back to Swift UI.
Let's do it.
What were some of the things you learned along the way that were kind of a struggle? Because I too started doing the Swift UI full time at my job, basically right when it came out. And so, you know, there was interesting things along the way, like through the initial beta releases and everything since then. But what kind of things have you learned, or what kind of pitfalls and scenarios and solutions have you learned?
Oh yeah, I have that. I have the response for that question. Definitely presenting sheets.
Okay.
Because I was using the is presented. That was the default method that I was using, and to be honest, it doesn't work for every case. Definitely, it has a point for single use, but when you need to present more than one, definitely you're gonna hit a wall, and that's when I learned the item, when you use an item to present, right? So that was definitely a pitfall at the beginning. And when I learned how to present more than one, now it's like the default way that I use to present those. It was the same for alerts. And the other thing that in my whole career as an iOS developer, something that I learned is to embrace the failure. Probably it's going to sound weird, but the first thing that I'm looking for is, how can I break this thing and learn from that? So since the beginning of my career, I started to break things and learn from them. So I don't have that anxiety that all the time the code needs to run flawlessly, right? I know that it's going to break. I know that I'm going to hit a wall. But the thing is that it excites me. I don't know why. And with Swift UI, I think most of the time it was a good relationship with it, to be honest. It was a smooth transition for me. But I'm saying this because sometimes you want to fight the guidelines, you know. You want to, we want to put, I don't know, a text fill in a place that it doesn't make sense. And I think that's when you have problems, when you wanted to make something that it doesn't make sense for the platform. Probably in a web page, probably it's going to make sense, but not in an iPhone or in the watch, right? So one thing that I learned very early is to respect the platform, to respect the framework. So go with it. Don't try to fight it.
That's some really good advice. Really good advice. Yeah, because when you're coming from UI kit land, lots of things you think you want to do, and you're trying to force it in there in Swift UI, but you got to go with flow. You got to go with Swift UI. You got to learn the way it's intended to be there, you know, or how it's intended to be implemented. So it's a definitely a big mind shift, but amazing. Once you get it, there's nothing like it.
It is. And you know what? You change the way that you, I mean, your approach to architecture, for example, or you're going to change your approach on tapping and, the actions in your app. It's totally different approach. And one thing that I really, really love about Swift UI is the intrinsic animations that you have for free. You don't need to write a bunch of code to have a decent starting point on an animation, right?
Right.
And the layout system is just mwah. It's just amazing. I deal with constraints, and I know a lot of you guys, I mean, a lot of your listeners, definitely they fight with constraints every day. I'm happy to say that I'm not fighting the layout system anymore. Yeah. I think, and that's because of Swift UI. It's been great.
It really has. I think a lot of people are still a little timid to jump in.
Yeah, I think. Well, I've been talking with my friends and senior developers that we have discussed these things, and to be honest, sometimes it's just the fear of being a beginner again.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
and the thing that probably you're not going to know a lot of things of this new framework. And that's normal, I think. And again, I'm going to go back what I said, that my approach was embrace the failure. Embrace that you're not going to know everything about this new framework. And all of us are beginners, and we are discovering a lot of things. So yeah, probably a lot of people just because they are comfortable, right? Writing UI kit code. Right. And I totally get it. And to be honest, they should continue to write UI kit if they want. The thing is that they are missing a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Without Swift UI.
Definitely. Definitely. I think that's the key word, fun. And if you think we're joking, we're not. Like, it is actually fun because it just opens up those doors. Like, oh, wow. Like, I could just do that easily. Like, your brain starts expanding. You're like, ooh, okay. Well, let's do this and this and this. And then, yeah, you do hit some walls and you're like, okay. Then you figure it out and you're back in action. So very cool. Very cool. So, yeah. What else would you love to tell us about what you've got going on to kind of wrap up the show?
I just want to say, thank you. Thank you for having me again. It's been a pleasure. I think one of the most important things as an iOS developer was to jump into the community. I mean, to be active in the community. I'm the guy who I buy courses and I pay for other developers' work. You know, I buy apps from them. I pay for the courses. I share. I like tweets. I rate my favorite podcast. So that's also, it's part of to be in the community. So it's been great. It's amazing how enthusiastic they are. I mean, all of us are about this, how we all love the Apple platforms and the devices, and we can talk for hours about this.
I know, right?
So I think the community is amazing. It's just encourage other people to jump in, reach out, let's talk, let's review some code, let's break things, let's have fun.
That is some great advice. Yeah, jumping into the community, it's an awesome community. So just jump in. We're here to help you, right?
That's right.
All right, Cesar, where can people find you online?
Oh, wow. Okay, here's the thing. I have a Twitter account, and you can find me at r4s3cdev. And I'm going to explain myself.
Yeah, explain right yourself out there.
So it reads like Rasek. It's my name. It's Cesar, but in reverse. And I just change the vowels for numbers. There's a story behind it. It's my gamer tag back in the day. So I just stick with it. So it's like my name, reverse, and then you change the vowels for numbers. So that's like Rasek Dev. It's complicated, but again, I don't know. I just keep the same tag and I'm using it. But probably you can put that in the show notes.
Yep, I definitely will. And yeah, if you look at it, you'll definitely recognize it. That Rasek Dev looks totally unique. And so it's really cool. So I just remember when I first saw that and I was like, oh, what is going on there? And then when I invited Cesar to be on the podcast, I was like, so what is your name? So, because that's all I saw. He's like, yeah. Oh yeah, it's my name backwards, but just with some, you know, numbers in there. I was like, oh, got it. There we go. So yeah, that's where you can find you. So is Twitter the main place that people can find you?
Yeah, definitely. I'm using Twitter all the time for my iOS-related communication, or I'm consuming my content from Twitter pretty much. So I'm use Twitter for that. You can reach me on Twitter.
Very cool. And your app is Days On Site. You can find it on the App Store.
Yeah, you can find on daysonsite.app. That's the main website. But also you can just write Days On Site on the App Store and you can find it.
It's probably the only result that comes up too, I'm guessing.
It is.
Yeah, that is the best. When
I mean, if you put Days, it's gonna give you a lot of results. But then you put in space and then on site, definitely.
You're the only one.
It's the only one.
That's perfect. That's an ideal situation. Cool. Well, definitely give Cesar a follow wherever you're at. Just jump into Twitter, give him a follow, connect with him. Our community is awesome. We're all part of it. And like Cesar said, we're all enthusiastic about this. And it's just so much fun, so much help, so much camaraderie. Very cool. I'm going to throw this in here really quick. Brought to you in part by SLEF. So if you go to scottsmithdev.com/SLEF, you'll find a place to get some stickers and some t-shirts. And the promo code, you can get 25% off until I think it's the 16th of December. And the promo code is FALL2020, F-A-L-L 2020. Anyway, you can find me online at Scott Smith Dev. I'm on YouTube, Twitter, and there we are. And we have fleets now. Come on, who doesn't like fleets? Anyway, I hope everybody enjoyed listening to the show. Cesar, thank you so much for being here. It was awesome talking with you.
No, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And I hope all you new people listening, you'll come back. Just come on back. Come on back. We'll be here for you. We'll be here waiting. Next episode will be episode 10. Who knows who will be on it? This wraps up episode 9 of season 2 of iOS Building Blocks. I'm Scott Smith, and we will talk to you later. Later? I don't say things like that. We'll see you later. Bye.